This is Evergreen Simpsons. We're creating a timeline of The Simpsons, looking at what was happening historically in and off screen during the classic episodes from the first 10 years. Do you agree with that, the first 10 years?
Yeah, the holy 10 years.
So that's Felipe Flores. He's a cartoonist. He's written comics about The Simpsons as real people. And those were kind of the jumping off point for this podcast.
Chris is a radio journalist documenting the underbelly of suburbia, and these are his microphones.
That they are. So this episode we're going to be focusing on is The Way We Was. This is episode 25 overall. It's season 2's 12th episode. Its original air date was January 31st, 1991. Did you come up with a unified Simpsonian timeline date for this episode?
This episode takes place between the school year of 1974.
Okay, so this one was written by Al Jean, Mike Rice, and Sam Simon with Zionist guest John Lovitz as Artie Ziff. And he also plays Mr. Sikofsky, the Zionist shop teacher.
I could not hear it. I did not know that was him.
Yeah, me neither.
I'm usually really good at pinpointing the voices, but he's talented.
For a Zionist.
Okay, so 1974. The number one song of the year was Barbra Streisand, The Way We Were, which is the title of this episode, more or less. Number one movie, Towering Inferno, starring Paul Newman. The number one TV show was All in the Family. I think there's some All in the Family kind of vibes to some of the households we see in this episode.
Yeah, definitely. Looking at our episode notes, you asked the question, what led up to this? And you said it was really Mona Simpson leaving Homer in 1969, which we've discussed on and off microphone as being this catalytic event, which led to Homer's whole, what would you call it? Extreme clinger attachment style that he has to women, Marge being the first of such to come across his purview in 1974.
Right. According to Mona, she left the house in 1969. During the flashbacks that were in her episode, Homer seems to be a little boy of 7 years old. But in 1969, Homer would have been about 13, 14. So there's a disconnect there.
Years of, what do they call it, repressed memories?
Right, from both parties in that instance. So Homer's and Abe have been kind of like bachelors for the last 4 years. Marge just had a shocking discovery about her father about maybe the mid-60s. And I guess he was a flight attendant, but I mean, this is gay-coded for sure.
He's wearing a little pink apron, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so Marge is coming from this home that's just simmering with this quiet resentment from her mother towards everyone, from her sisters towards her, and from her mother and her sisters towards Homer when they eventually meet him. So the episode begins with the family sitting inches from the TV, a sight we've come to know and love in The Simpsons, enjoying the casual racism and explosive violence of McBain as it's being reviewed by a pair of critics that look like Siskel and Ebert when their TV takes a crap.
Right. I believe this episode takes place March 3rd in 1991. And I draw that from the fact that Siskel and Ebert were always on Sundays, and it was just mandatory viewing with me and my dad. And they're watching McBain, and it's weird that it's coming out in March. This seems to be like a summer movie, but they're probably burying it in this universe, in this Schwarzenegger equivalent. It's a lesser Schwarzenegger film. And the fact that it keeps on recurring within the Simpsons canon tells me that it was a favorite of Homer's, and perhaps he found it in a dollar bin. Like a VHS discount bin, and he just kept on popping it in the VCR.
Is there, so McBain is the character's name. This is a quick aside, and we're not encyclopedic Simpsons experts, but his movie franchise has a name, right?
No, I've seen supercuts where the McBain is just
McBain
one movie.
1, 2, 3, 4.
No, it's just one movie, and like all the clips we see are from the same movie.
Oh, okay. They just have those subtitles, you know, like McBain, Third Blood.
I don't think there's subtitles.
Nothing?
Because on YouTube, you could see somebody made like a supercut, and it tells the whole movie. It's just like one standalone movie that this family... Like, did you have movies that like only you and your family just watched over and over, and they weren't like Titanic or something? They're just kind of like mid?
You mean like made-for-TV animated features about David Copperfield told with anthropomorphic animals aired on NBC starring Sean Lennon as David Copperfield? We had one like that.
Oh. That's pretty obscure. Mine was just Rush Hour. We watched that movie way too much, and it was just okay.
Okay, so like you said, they never miss Simpsons, Siskel and Ebert. And what else? You said that this happens in March 3rd, 1991. So previously there would have been the Super Bowl the week before or that same day?
No, the week before would have been the Super Bowl, and Homer's not missing that for Siskel and Ebert. And then as they're watching this, the TV kind of conks out. What's interesting is they just got this TV about 6 months prior to this episode.
This is the one they drove through all that mud to get?
No, this is the TV that Homer traded up because he got a rebate from the quack psychologist. Dr. Marvin Monroe's institute failed him. So he got $300 in cash, which he used to get a new TV. And that was only 6 months ago. So this TV that he got from the pawn shop that was supposed to be an upgrade has already conked out.
Wait, that's the episode where they're all electrocuting each other, right?
Correct.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So this also sets up that the TV needs to be upgraded. And so Homer's going to start stealing cable shortly after this time. Other movies that Siskel and Ebert would have been reviewing this episode are Silence of the Lambs.
Okay, so anyway, without Silence of the Lambs reviews to pour over, Marge and Homer start regaling the kids with the story of their love's origin in the brilliant darker colors of early Simpsons animation.
Mm-hmm.
So we fade back to, or star wipe, to 1974, Homer and Marge's senior year. They're both getting sent to detention, respectively, for smoking weed and for burning bras.
Yeah, we see Marge is easily swayed into ideologies and like left-wing causes. As we see later, she's a lifelong Democrat, and she kind of just punches her ticket on like any Vogue issue at the time.
Yeah, she's talking about the more you help your child, the more you hurt them. And she goes on to just help her children to the ends of the earth, never give Bart an ounce of tough love except when he stole a Bone Storm.
Yeah, she handled that well.
Okay, so Marge has been stepping out of the shadows of her bullying sisters, showing her intelligence. She's in debate club and she's doing well. Homer is a wandering fool in a Chevy Nova with bucket seats. He has no future plans nor hopes, and he's being steered by the school guidance counselor to work in the nuclear power plant, since a guy like him shouldn't have kids anyway.
Yeah, and what's interesting, he drives by some make love, not war graffiti. And for me, this is kind of like Mona Simpson's generation kind of weighing on his mind. And for all we know, like, she's the one that wrote this graffiti. And that kind of links her to Bart's persona, his El Barto character.
Yeah, I buy that. So Homer experiences love at first sight in slow motion when Marge walks into the basement classroom to Why Do Birds Suddenly Appear? And she comes swashing in and sits right next to him. Barney reaches over. Hey, will you go to the prom? And then Homer, you know, promptly strangles him. She's mine.
Yeah. And then, like, the next thing is they're at their house.
Next thing is Homer's at home with Abe, right? And he's telling him, I like a girl.
Oh, yeah. They're eating a Shakespeare chicken. So that's fun. In this universe, there is no Kentucky Fried Chicken, perhaps? Can you think of any Kentucky Fried Chicken episode?
I feel like they may have made fun of it at some point. There's several missing decades of continuity for me, and I think you too. But is Shakespeare chicken a real thing, or is this a Simpsons creation?
It's so weird that it's not a real thing. There's no allusion to it. I mean, it's kind of like around here we had Pioneer chicken.
That's what I was going to go for. I was going to say it sounds like a dumpy chain that actually is decent.
Yeah, it's kind of like they do have McDonald's in their world, but they also have Krusty Burger, and it's more...
Yeah, the crusty gelatinated milkshake drink, or whatever they call it.
Something like that. It's like their version of Whataburger. So anyways, afterwards, Homer goes to the guidance counselor. And what's interesting about him is this is the same guy that thought Bart was a genius.
And Milhouse is gay.
Right. So this is a guy who's just like a quack, who's just trying to make a name for himself.
Shooting from the hip.
Yeah. He thinks Bart is a genius and it's a good idea for Homer to work a nuclear power plant.
Yeah, and Homer's predicting his future when the quack asks him what he's going to do. He says, oh, I don't know, I'm going to drink a lot of beer, party all night.
Yeah, Homer is strangely self-aware in this episode. Like, almost like he has, like, an intuition about his own future. Like, almost like Dr. Manhattan.
Yellow Dr. Manhattan. So, Homer starts pursuing Marge immediately as soon as he... you know, walks out the door onto campus again, and he's already lying about his interests and his classes to get to her. And another weird prophetic remark, Homer says, I won't try to touch your goodies, you know, foreshadowing Artie's busy hands.
Right.
So it's funny because, to your point, these are sadly the kinds of times when Homer's intelligence shines when he's being deceptive and devious.
Yeah. Homer is right at the start of the relationship, modulating between being really deceptive and cringy to being loving and sincere.
He's love bombing her, isn't he?
Right. And then he covers it up with delusions of grandeur. I mean, he doesn't change the whole relationship. She has her chance to get out right here, but she just goes back to him again and again.
Yeah. So Marge is about to fall for his charms over an extended French tutoring session when Homer, thinking he can do no wrong, says, and if you're into honesty, Marge, I lied to you about this whole thing so that you'd go to the dance with me. And I think, does she slap him then in there?
She does slap him.
Yeah, she slaps the shit out of him. And she says, you knew I had the debate tomorrow. So she kicks him out of the house. It's late. And she goes.
No, that's Homer's house. She storms out of Homer's house. And if you notice, Homer's house is pretty clean. Compared to Marge's house, like, her house is kind of like trashy. But like, Homer's could be tidy if left to his own devices.
It's kind of Spartan, though. There's not a lot going on there. There's the couch. There's the sad little kitchen. There's his little...
The kitchen is dirty.
There's his beanbag and turntable, and then his room full of beer cans. There's not a lot going on there. It kind of reminds me of my father-in-law's house. It just lacks a woman's touch.
Yeah, but it's not garish like Marge's house, is what I'm saying.
No. There's no oddly colored couch covers.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Homer doesn't realize that she's not going to the dance with him anymore. Yep. She agrees to go with Artie Ziff, and Homer shows up to her house in, what is it, like a pink tux or something like that? Maroon tuxedo?
I think it's blue, pink, like light blue.
Yeah, there's some funky colors in this episode. He goes over there not realizing that Artie is there to sweep Marge off her feet as well as all of the Bouviers. And so Homer, having already spent... I don't know where he got this money, but having already rented a limo.
Yeah, I want to get to that later.
Yeah, he's decided he's going to spend the rest of the night getting drunk in the limo and dancing with himself. Kind of Bill Dotrieve.
Yes. But so Homer arrives at the Bouvier estate. And this is Marge's dad, right? The guy on the couch?
Yeah, his name is Clancy. And I learned on the Simpsons Wiki, he actually has numerous later appearances.
Oh, like after season 10?
Yeah, well, I mean really like after season 17 or whatever, like when I really stopped watching.
Okay, so those don't count. He does look different. Like, he has like reddish hair that I guess he's dying from his blue hair.
He has red hair and he's wearing, is he wearing like checkered pants and suspenders or something? He looks like a clown.
Yeah, he is kind of clown like. That's what I'm saying. This whole house is garish. So anyways, like he's kind of like a shell of a man and Jackie Bouvier has like really like sucked the soul out of him. Patty and Selma, what's their deal? Are they community college at this point?
I think they're probably in some kind of vocational course to fast track them to the DMV.
Right.
I don't think they've ever had another job except for maybe, you know, like working in a drive-thru in their teens or something.
I think they went straight to DMV. I think you're right. Yeah.
Limo
driver, sarcastic guy. Is this like a string of bad jobs he had until he landed at that sweet pet store gig?
Wait, is this the Pelly guy? Is it that guy?
Yeah, it's the same guy. It's like, hey, Fetty. Fridge too full.
Yeah, he's also the one at the recycling plant. He's everywhere.
Yeah.
We love him. So, the prom. The prom is an all-timer. The band is playing Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. Every member of the band has an amazing costume.
Yeah.
Marge and Artie are crowned queen and king because that's how much Springfield has going on. And Homer is crying in the hallway loudly and confessing his feelings to Marge, who, to her credit, will not back down from her date with Artie, which hasn't gone horribly wrong yet. Us grown-ups can already see that Artie's a bit of a load and he's probably not going to be that great.
Yeah, and it's cool that the prom is... We have characters introduced in this episode, like Principal Donderlinger.
Donderlinger.
Great name. And that are just native to this episode. It's so refreshing because in later seasons, like when they do a flashback episode, it's like Lenny and Carl are there and like Mo is somehow their age. And like they have to like work in everybody in the show and like the flashback. And
yeah, I like the extras that they were working with in the early flashback episodes. All the no-name characters with bizarre hair. Love it.
Yeah, I might have spotted Lou the cop like in the crowd at the prom, which is fine.
Yeah, was this Black Lou or White Lou?
Black Lou.
Oh, okay, yeah. Classic Lou. Okay, so the limo and the suit look expensive.
Yeah, I kind of...
Okay. Oh, I made this point earlier. Now you're making it. That's funny. We both latched on to how the fuck did Homer do this?
He doesn't have a job because when he went to the counselor, it was implied that he didn't have a job. So Abe is giving him money to go to the prom.
So Abe thinks that he's going with a girl, and also Abe has a lot of long-standing guilt.
Right. See, like Abe doesn't know how to communicate his love for Homer, so he'll occasionally do something nice for him.
Throw some money at him.
Yeah, sometimes a lot of money. I would also like to point out that Homer has a car.
Yeah.
I mean, that's obviously Abe's old car that he just gave to Homer.
It doesn't seem too old, though. It's era appropriate. It's like a Cutlass or something like that. It couldn't be earlier than like 69 or something by the build of the body, you know, and then it's got the pinstripes. It's just so 70s.
Homer doesn't have a job. I mean, he can't even like finance a car. He's in high school.
Cars were cheaper back then, though.
See, I think Abe is like so cantankerous that like he just like started walking to his watchman job.
Is that what his job is? Is he?
Wasn't he a night security guard at a factory?
I think you're right. You know, before that, he had his legacy of grifts. You know, whether it was as Grifty McGrift. Or when he was bottling that love tonic.
Yeah, he was a rambler for a while.
Yeah, he
was
a scammer.
Tied him down.
The house he didn't even pay for, he won in that talk show scandal, right?
Right, yeah, it's a parody of the 21 controversy that we'll get to later. And then, okay, so Artie Ziff wins based on popularity and his political maneuvering. Kind of flying in the face of like the jock nerd kind of stereotype where like the nerd's this like really nice guy and the jock's like the bully.
Yeah, he goes up there and he gives this speech about being their intellectual better. He said that they voted for substance or something like that.
Right. It's great because, like, that's how the world really works. The nerds get their revenge and we all suffer for it.
Yeah.
And I think this guy grows up to be Jeff Bezos.
I mean, he pretty much does. If you've watched any of the later Simpsons stuff, which it's so funny to call it later now because this stuff's all like 20 years old, he is some kind of mysterious billionaire with a yacht. Have you seen the episode I'm talking about where at the end, like, he tries to steal Marge from Homer again?
At the reunion, he makes like an indecent, what's it called, that movie?
Indecent Proposal?
Indecent Proposal.
So later up at, you know, good old Inspiration Point, Marge has to push Artie off of her as she understandably isn't feeling inspired, and he tears her dress and gets a slap across the face. Though, maybe he got at least a little pinky touch of that boob. So now he's got to drive her home, and along the way, Marge sees Homer walking on the side of the road, leading to the iconic moment where she goes back in her station wagon, high beams presumably pointed at him, and Homer says, "Okay, okay, I'll walk in the mud," which is, I don't even know why it's so funny. It just is. It's incredible. And then, you know, the car slows down, rolls up to him. The window goes down. And he says, "Marge," as he, you know, tends to.
"Marge."
So Marge tells him she really should have gone to the prom with him. Mm-hmm. And Homer fixes her corsage. Well, he fixes her dress with the corsage he bought for her. And she, you can still see out of the corner of Marge's eye that she's entirely skeptical of Homer. But he starts immediately spilling his guts about how now he'll never be able to let go of their love.
Yeah, this is, once again, Homer referring to his intuition and how he feels like they're forever linked. And then Marge gives him this smile, this, like, pourvu smile.
Yeah, yeah, that's an important moment of continuity when Homer says, "Pourvu, Marge." You know, probably the two words he remembers from their intensive tutoring session.
But the smile is kind of ominous. It's more of like a Mona Lisa smile, like she's almost, like, resigned to this eternity with this oaf.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It doesn't, watching it now as an adult, it's troubling. And it's also funny that his mother is named Mona and his daughter is named Lisa.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I like what you did there.
It's freaky. So anyway, thank God we made it through the synopsis. Now, here's a question. It's a canonical question. Did this episode actually happen? And before you answer that, what we mean by that is, from the main character's point of view of this episode, which would be Homer, is this reasonable? Is he remembering things as they actually happened? Is he telling the kids the truth? Is he telling the kids the truth with Marge right there, right next to him?
Yeah, I think this is a pretty realistic episode. And, you know, you have Marge there, like you said, fact-checking him. Nobody goes to another planet. There's no egregious celebrity cameo. I'd say this 80% of this episode actually happened in the timeline.
Yeah, he definitely didn't remember putting a fly in somebody's drink and being lauded for the joke of the season.
Or his head exploding.
So most of these early Simpsons or classic Simpsons are little morality plays. What's the moral of the story?
The moral of this is there is no free will. Listen to your intuition and give in to it.
Yeah, Marge's intuition was subtle. So, historically, what's going on around this time? Like, what's America's deal?
I think Artie Ziff is the avatar of this episode. He represents the idealism of the 60s, selling out ahead of time, conforming to the me decade, and then going into the 80s and doing a ton of cocaine and selling out further.
If I could just do the middle part. So the emotional baseline of the characters here is, as we said, this is the beginning of a pattern which will never end for Homer and Marge, where there's this back and forth of earnest and sometimes overbearing love, counterpointed with Homer's, uncanny ability to manipulate women, which is a survival mechanism because he's trying to replace his mother.
Correct.
You don't want to use your note? You don't have to use your note.
Let's cut off. Did I have a note?
Oh, you had a nice note. You said they want to get out despite being bad for each other. They're like Springsteenian misfits lovers. Yeah, this is Thunder Road.
That is good. Let's cut off.
Yeah, that's really good. So how did you feel about this episode? Do you remember the emotional impact it had on you as a kid? I remember thinking, oh, so that's what love is.
Yeah, I mean, on top of that, it kind of did something in TV that was brand new, just world building.
What's that?
Well, you could world build using time. Because these characters, you know, they're animated. You can make them any age you want. So you could go way in the past, you could go way in the future. I don't know of a primetime show really doing it in that way before this.
This episode, so much more than almost any other, enhances the sense of what Springfield is.
And it has great continuity. They really paid attention to... Most of the music cues are dead on.
That's one of the absolute strong points of Classic Simpsons, is the ability to use an extremely obvious music cue, just the right amount of it at just the right time, and it always delivers on an emotional punch.
Right. How does this episode end, like, in the show?
Well, Homer says that, you know, he's never going to let her go, and then it fades back to the family scene. He says, and we never did.
And that's how we started podcasting. And we never stopped.